Continue now with a paper from Ernst Klee. I'm delighted to be able to announce him. He is a scriptwriter and also an author of books, and above all, specialized in the history of National Socialism. Ernst Klee, please. That was gratifyingly brief. Racial hygiene, or to put it another way, the capital city of racism was Berlin, even before the Nazi era, because this was the center of racial hygiene. They called it hereditary biology. And racial hygiene served the purpose of legitimating the rule of whites over blacks, men over women, and allegedly high value people over inferior people. The Kaiser Wilhelm Institute of Anthropology, Hereditary Doctrine and Eugenics was founded in 1927 in Berlin. The Nazis used this institute to train doctors and officials in order to eliminate people who were regarded as hereditary diseased, but also aliens, and to legitimate their racial policies. At the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, from the outset, the only people able to work were such as who did not have to be dismissed after 1933 as non-Aryan or erroneous thinkers. It was free of Jews from the outset. It was run by Eugen Fischer, who in March 1933 signed an appeal and published an appeal in the Nazi newspaper of heads of universities. He became rector of the university himself and was responsible for the dismissal of Jewish colleagues. And Max Planck, who was president of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, after all, the Max Planck Institute was named after him later on, he said on a number of occasions that the should serve the national government to the extent we could. He said, "It is my honor to inform the ministry that the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute is willing to promote sciences and place them systematically at the service of the Reich in the interests of racial hygienic research." The Nazis needed this institute, and above all, they needed Eugen Fischer, who had an international reputation for his research. Otto Gut, who was responsible for the Sterilization Act, which the Nazis adopted, was also a member of the Board of Trustees of this Kaiser Wilhelm Society. And he had a few minor differences with Eugen Fischer, but he said that cooperation seemed inevitable, given that no other institute seemed as suitable for supporting their work as this one. Teachers were needed to teach officials and doctors so that they would be able to carry out the Nazi legislation on people with hereditary diseases. I'm telling you all this because we can't reduce all the things that happened then to psychiatry or the psychiatric community. It was a far bigger structure. In 1934, in the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute here in Berlin, an annual course for doctors was begun on racial hygiene, where the doctors received indoctrination for their later activities. Georg Renner was one of the participants, and he had a successful career gassing people in Hartheim. Eugen Fischer owed it to Hitler. He thanked Hitler after the Nuremberg racist acts were adopted, after marriage was prohibited, and indeed any form of love was prohibited between people who were regarded as having German blood and non-Aryans. After those racial laws were adopted, Eugen Fischer thanked Hitler because he'd made it possible for researchers such as him to make their research serviceable, useful. These people very early agreed to serve the annihilation policies of the Nazis, either as magistrates on what they called the Health Tribunal or working in the Central Reich Department of Hereditary Research, where they were responsible for people's elimination based on whether they were declared to be Aryan or not. This Berlin Institute gave the Nazis a scholarly cloak. It's quite interesting to observe this. The people who worked there didn't understand, see themselves as Nazis to begin with. And that's why it was only later on, from 1939 onwards, that they sought to join the National Socialist Party, the NSDAP. And some party officials were critical about that, but Himmler decided it because he said, we can't on the one hand draw on the resources of these people, Eugen Fischer and Fritz Lenz in this case, to shore up the scientific arguments of the party and at the same time refuse to accept them as comrades in the party. This scientific center of racism worked with another department, the Criminological Office of the Security Police, the secret police, on registering gypsies. Let's just call them gypsies for simplicity's sake here. They had gypsies sterilized, they threw them out of the armed forces and ultimately had them deported to concentration camps. Another institute which played its part in the Nazis' annihilation campaign and a very deeply rooted role was another Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. They're now all called Max Planck Institute, but this was the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Brain Research. This Kaiser Wilhelm Max Planck Institute worked together with the Euthanasia Center in Tiergarten Center number 4 in Berlin. They had a very unique form of cooperation. The center was responsible for processing the brains of Jews who had been murdered. Hallervorden was in charge of this. He was born in 1882, so he wasn't a young man anymore. He wasn't one of those young careerists. And for many years, he worked in Landsberg on the River Warta in a hospital. He was supposed to dissect corpses in the state of Brandenburg. He was regarded as an excellent specialist and above all a man of integrity, and everybody agreed that he was never a Nazi. But in 1933 he became a sponsoring member of the SS. During the denazification procedure, he explained this. He said, at that time, in 1933, two SS men came to me and asked me to join them as a sponsoring member. To begin with, I rejected this, but a few days later they came back and persuaded my wife, while I was lying ill in bed, that the SS was a worthwhile cause. I myself didn't know much about the SS and its significance. So that's what he said after 1945. It was his wife's fault and he knew nothing about the SS. After Hallervorden became a sponsoring member of the SS, he was able to join and tried to join the Public Servants Association of the Nazis as quickly as possible. He was responsible for certain charitable organizations run by the Nazis and then joined the NSDAP. Hallervorden said, in 1938, I became a candidate for membership and I got my membership card, 5 million and whatever, but this was not until March 1939. I've spoken to a lot of people who knew him, and they always referred to him as an honest East Prussian. If you look at his denazification papers, it doesn't quite look like that. He said that he didn't ever get a membership card and never swore an oath of allegiance to Hitler as a member of the party. Well, he can try to tell us these stories, but at the time, everybody knew that he had already taken an oath of allegiance to Hitler as a public servant in 1933. Also, he went to party meetings, even if he claims he was apolitical. Friedrich Baumann also testifies. Well, maybe his testimony isn't worth a lot because he was a medical officer in the middle ranking echelons of the Nazis' euthanasia structures. If we look at Hallervorden's career, in 1938 he became head of department at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Brain Research, and Hitler appointed him professor. Hitler appointed lots of people professor, and in 1945 these people remained professors. They kept their chairs. Hallervorden cooperated with the central unit responsible for child murder in Brandenburg, not that far away, in the town of Brandenburg. He set up an outside branch of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Brain Research there and ensured that children who appeared to him to be of scientific interest were transferred to that unit and investigated, examined by his team before they were murdered. The corpses were then explored, examined by Eicher. I got to know him. He was later head of a psychiatric hospital in Magdeburg after the war. During his denazification procedure, he said that he was particularly outraged by the way that people with mental disorders had been treated, and that he had rigorously opposed this. Hallervorden, a great resistance fighter, had in spring 1940 been one of about 40 participants in a meeting of the euthanasia unit, where they were told not only about how patients were being murdered, but also inducted into a number of tasks relating to this. And one of those was to carry out pathological examinations of valuable brain matter. That's why every gasification unit had a dissecting table right next door to the gas chamber from a very early point in time. The mass murder of people with mental disorders took a few weeks. There were complaints that the patients were actually killed before they had been properly examined, which would have been better for the purposes of scientific research. Hallervorden went to the gasification unit in Brandenburg in 1944. Unlike the other gas units, it was in the middle of town. After the war, of course, everybody said they didn't know anything about it, they'd never seen it and never heard anything. But in Brandenburg, the gas chamber was right in the center of town. And people complained about the smell when bodies were being burnt. The complaints were accepted and they started burning the bodies outside town. On the 28th of October 1940, Hallervorden himself went to the gas unit where children were being murdered, children he thought were of scientific interest, and he started doing the dissecting himself on the spot in the gas chamber. There is no document where this man, who is described as being honest, a man of integrity, where he ever describes what he did there. He never talked about it. He refused to talk about that period, even though at the time the things that I'm talking about weren't widely known. Halliforden received more brains than he could process. That's why, on the 12th of August 1941, he wrote to his boss, Hugo Spatz, a well-known brain researcher, and said, "I've received some excellent brains, but I'm trying to collect as few as possible for future considerations." I think we have to bear in mind, we tend to see the Nazi era as one of oppression and persecution. For these scientists, it was a period of unprecedented opportunity. They had more power than ever before, and more than they would ever have again in their lives. And the aim was never to do anything in the interests of humanity, to come up with cures for diseases. They were concerned with their careers and scientific research. There were two university centers where children were murdered and investigated, examined. The other was the university in Heidelberg. And if we look at the purged files, we see that there is a directory of these children, an index, and we see that these children whose murder had been decided upon had a great deal of attention devoted to them at a period when 1940, when there was less and less food available for the population and the war had taken a turn and looked as though it might be lost. These children, who had after all been condemned to death, were lavishly examined. Urine, blood profile, liquor, metabolism, ECG, X-ray of breast and skull, encephalography, that is ECG, the spinal fluid was examined, that is air was injected, the head was photographed from all angles, the ears, the hands, the feet, many photographs, and then we have metrical measurements and tabular evaluations and interviews of all kinds of people, and at the end of this we had a dissection outcome, that is, a dissection of the brain. That was part of the final file. So, of course, for the perpetrators, for the scientists, these were excellent research conditions. You could select your patient as a result of the examinations, you could kill them, and then you could do your own research on the corpse as much as you wanted. It was research which I would regard as bioethical. Of course, ethics is always totally subordinate to biology, to the biological process. In Igelfingen near Munich, where there was another research unit and where people were murdered, there was a special procedure for dissecting corpses. The Kaiser Wilhelm Institute responsible for psychiatry was interested in this. The bodies of the murdered children were taken apart according to its principles. These people regarded this mass murder as a kind of harvest festival, and it must have been a breathtaking time for them. In the official annual report of the Psychiatric Institute, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, they wrote, very much rare, valuable material was gathered on early cerebral damage in children and defective births. These are researchers, scientists, enjoying the pleasure of examining these brains, and there's a big, thick volume with more than 1,000 pages published by the Max Planck Society on its 70th anniversary about the Kaiser Wilhelm and Max Planck Society. And this procedure which involves the use of the brains of murdered people is dealt with in this 70th anniversary publication. They say the mass death of people with mental disorders opened the doors for the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Psychiatry and Brain Research, open new doors for research. At the time, a journalist took up this story, and the Max Planck Society, we're talking about 1974 when this 70th anniversary took place, the Nobel Prize winner Adolf Butenandt took out a court injunction forbidding the journalist from claiming that the Max Planck Institute or the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute had ever been engaged in brain research in this context. These people see themselves as the elite of scientific research, and they distinguish themselves in no way whatsoever from other Nazi lackeys. First of all, they deny what happened. When they can no longer do that, they finally admit it, and then they try to make it sound much more harmless than it was and distract attention. The most important psychiatrist at the time was Trudin. He held nearly all the major functions. Trudin was a German but also a Swiss citizen. He'd been born in Switzerland. In 1933, he was in charge of the Racial Hygiene and Racial Policy Chair, and he was also on the Racial Advisory of the Reich Interior Ministry, so he was responsible for all these major decisions. In November 1935, he assured Hitler that he always designed his research in such a way that the research would be a firmer foundation for your, he's writing to Hitler, racial program in Germany to ensure it is successful. In 1937, he managed to be admitted to the Nazi Party. He worked with Plötz in 1938, and in the Archive on Racial Hygiene, he explained to foreign colleagues about the great accomplishments of this new Germany. Sterilization Act, Aryan marriage, and the Nuremberg racial acts. And they both together wrote to their foreign colleagues that all these acts have initiated currents of charitable, beneficial work, and in the near and far future we will be seeing the fruits of this work reaped. On his 65th birthday, Hitler awarded him the Goethe Medal for Art and Science, and he received a lot of other awards too. He lamented the Second World War, as all racial hygienists eventually did, because so many virtuous young people were unfortunately destroyed just at the time when they could be proliferating most. And at the time he also said that liberty, equality, and fraternity had been demonstrated to be unnatural virtues. In other words, he was implying that they had been, this was a reason for occupying other countries. On the 10th anniversary of the Nazis taking of power, he wrote an article which is an ode to Nazi annihilation policies. Rudin praises Himmler for that decisive stake towards racial hygiene. He said Himmler's orders that SS members must select their wives on a racist list, he praises, and he also praises the racial acts which limit the possibility for hereditary diseases. He says the racial acts make it mean that little Jewish blood will be able to enter the German nation. He also talks about alien blood of Jews and gypsies and the need to exclude that. He's doing that in January 1940, at a time when Jewish elimination was proceeding full steam ahead. Yudin, and it's clear from these few sentences, wasn't just any Nazi psychiatrist, he was the Nazi psychiatrist. And in May 1945, Switzerland withdrew his citizenship. In December 1945, the Americans interned him, but in August 1946, for reasons of illness, he was released. And he owes that above all to Max Planck, who testified that he had never, in his scientific research, ever been influenced by political motives. Max Planck is washing a man clean who, in his racial madness, sent people to their elimination. Rudin died in October 1942. The obituary of the Max Planck Psychiatry Institute calls him one of the most outstanding scientists of genetic research in the psychiatric field. He was succeeded by Willy Badholz, also a famous brain researcher. On the 3rd of November 1962, he was dean of the medical faculty in Munich. Who said that he would be remembered for ensuring that our institute was never instrumentalized for political reasons. Of course, this man had every reason to claim that the institute had never been politicized because he had been using the brains of these murdered children.
There's one psychiatrist who can serve as an example, and this is Werner Villinger, as an example for the lies in this field. He received tenure in with Prorector Emil Balle, professor for Old Testament and former SA Reserve, produces a collection of legends which was characterized as an expert statement by the Phillips University. And I quote Balla about Villinger. He went outside to resist NS principles and NS orders, and particularly dealt with Jews. Well, I don't know any Nazi criminal who did not deal with Jews. Villinger declares himself a friend of the Jews, as somebody who performed euthanasia and who was an opponent to the Nazi regime. During denazification, the jury is impressed most by Erhard's testimony, and I remember him from my studies in Marburg. Helmut Erhard, how should I say this, has always, he's always been on my mind because he said compensation for victims of Nazi euthanasia or sterilization would mean putting real compensation to shame. And I'm a very patient person, but Mr. Erhard belongs to those whose biography I've been researching for 20 now. And he had moved out of his apartment 2 years before. He took up a residence in an old people's home, in a retirement home, and there he had the last documents of these Nazi crimes put into a plastic bag in order for them to be destroyed. Now, this plastic bag ended up with me 2 weeks later. So he said about Villinger, his boss, that the euthanasia demanded by the party, he had always combated. And therefore, Villinger is acquitted as denazified. He was somebody who... Villinger had an assistant between 42 and 44, and this assistant had to indicate his income, his earnings, and in 1940 those were 2,000 marks, 3,000 in 41. In 43 this figure had doubled to 6,000 marks. This is due to the fact that Erhard had additional income as an expert who wrote expertises for courts, for special courts, particularly courts that were used for political opponents, and also the People's Courts of Justice. But Erhard says that he had always worked for the protection of the accused. During his proceedings, he had claimed to have always worked against National Socialism, actively. First reason, he said that he had been a member of the Catholic fraternity Alemannia in Munich. Second reason he gave, he had actively combated Nazi eugenic with the expertises that he wrote. However, we should doubt this, because the experts employed by the courts were only employed if they were in line with or if they adhered to Nazi ideology. And he had been used as an expert quite a number of times. Had he resisted Nazi eugenics, he would hardly have been commissioned with any more expertises. Erhard also claims that he had never been a member of the NSDAP, but he had applied for membership in 37, and he had also obtained a membership card. His boss, Villinger, those two had always claimed each other's injustice, but so they were their histories were closely linked. He had written an affidavit saying that Erhard had actively resisted the Nazi regime in the hospital. And then he explained what kind of resistance. He said the work in a neurological hospital had always offered a number of Pointer One was vulnerable. On March 28, 1941, since this time he was registered as an expert with the task of selecting victims for the gas chamber. And the hypocrisy also becomes obvious when we consider that Werner Villinger very aggressively had been very aggressive in having his patients sterilized. He had been the physician in charge, a physician in charge before, and he had always applied for sterilization of his patients. He had also had foreign patients sterilized, which according to the law wasn't allowed. And he said that they had only made one exception, and that was in the case of a young boy from Braunau, which is the place where Hitler was born. Helmut Erhard's career progresses. He becomes a private assistant to Villinger, and finally he is given a tenure position. He becomes the head of the Institute for Forensic Psychiatry, and he is also the expert in a proceeding which deals specifically with gasification chambers. In 1963, he wrote in an expertise for the Federal Ministry of Finance that a compensation for those who were sterilized would in many cases ridicule the actual victims who deserved a compensation. Then he said those who executed the Sterilization Act were no Nazis. The authors of the Sterilization Act were SS-Gruppenführer Gütt, Rüding, and Sturmbannführer Wuttke. And another 14 years later, Erhard claimed that many of those who were sterilized by force had forgotten the intervention. And I quote, they do no longer perceive their human dignity as being violated. Erhard kept the menus of dinners which he had had. For example, in the Excelsior Hotel in Cologne, a scampi cocktail with melons, for example, then iced consommé. And other kinds of very fancy food, such as, for example, strawberry sorbet for dessert. The wines are also very exquisite. And there's a Kirschwasser from Schwarzwald and or Remy Martin for dessert. Now, Erhard did not want the victims of sterilization to be compensated, but he kept the menu cards of the very exquisite dinners that he had had. He also received a lot of honors and awards. He received so many awards and so many honorary positions that I can't even read them out here. Let me just give you one example. From 1966 to 69, he was the deputy president of the German Society for Sexual for Research. From 1969 on, he was in the Scientific Advisory Committee of the Federal Medical Board. 1969, he became the president of the German Society for Psychiatry and Neurology. He became the president of the European League for Psychological Hygiene. 1972, president of the Society for Criminology. 1970 to 1983, he became the doctor in charge for a disabled person in the state of Hesse. In 1986, he received the Paracelsus Medal, which is the highest recognition of German medicine. He was a member of the advisory board of the WHO, a member of the ethics committee and forensic section of the Association for Psychiatry, and he also became an honorary member. To come to my conclusion, a Sinto who had been displaced in 1944 is being examined for a statement in the 19 for an expert statement for a court ruling in the 1970s, and it says that there is no evidence of any harm, any disorder, and no indication of any severe neurosis or trauma due to an experience. He was sterilized in 1944. So nothing was diagnosed that could be seen in the context of the sterilization. And also, it says that given this particular case, it does not seem that the sterilization has led to a conflict situation as far as marriage is concerned, because the wife had undergone a similar intervention. The Auschwitz survivor had not only been sterilized, his mother, son, and three siblings were murdered. Adam Strauss, president of the Association of German Sinti and Roma in Hesse, read the expertise when in public at a commemorative event, and this document was signed by Villinger and Helmut Erhard. There are issues that are really unbearable because if I start thinking about justice and human dignity, you could really go mad yourself because you just can't bring it together. In the name of science, victims of National Socialism were ridiculed, and this was even in the guise of expert statements. And it's intolerable, it's unbearable, but it's a fact. Thank you.